Welcome to First Things First. It is Monday. I am Jenna Wolf. He is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a big Monday show for you today. Talking Lakers, is LeBron throwing his teammates under the bus? Because there's an executive who certainly thinks he is.
Anonymous.
Anonymous executive.
We've got it narrowed down. By the end of the show, we're figuring out who it is. My money's on Genie Bus.
Speaking of teams out west, the Warriors continue to slide, but we have to start with what happens when Brown becomes black and silver. Antonio Brown is now an Oakland Raider. It was this weekend's big NFL news, the Steelers sending their very disgruntled star wide receiver out west to the Raiders. In return, they received a third and a fifth round pick, and they're hoping a much quieter, calmer locker room. Brown certainly got his money. The Raiders gave him a new contract, $30 million guaranteed, and up to $54 million. All right, Chris Carter, I start with you. Turns out there were a few teams interested in Brown, but Oakland made the final deal. What was your reaction to all of this?
Well, Oakland's a tremendous winner. And just imagine if this had been John Gruden in his first year.
Yeah.
And just imagine what the, after coming out of the TV booth, tremendous expectations, 10-year guaranteed contract, reportedly. Mm-hmm. But we went through a year where we saw him give up good young players and trade them. Khalil Mack, trading him before the season to the Bears. Amari Cooper, during the season, trading him to the Dallas Cowboys. And then now you're going to go out. And I like the fact that Mike Mayock was involved in this. And I believe that Mike Mayock will be able to help their front office. Because for a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick, I didn't think they were going to get a number one. Because I knew there was too much baggage out there. And there's some other things out there about AB that other teams aren't going to want. I knew from the beginning he wanted a new contract. So that also, that hurts his ability to be able to get a number, fetch a number one pick. Because if you give them more compensation in draft, they give you less cash. If you give them less compensation in draft picks, then the team is more apt to give you more money. And this worked out for the Oakland Raiders. Tremendous trade for them, getting an elite player playing in the prime of his career with an offense and an offensive-minded coach that was under a great deal of criticism as if he had forgotten football when he had gone to the TV booth. So the Raiders have to be very, very happy about this trade. Pittsburgh Steelers, they lose up and down the board. Front office, they lose. The ownership, they lose. And the coaching staff loses. And one day, they're going to fire Mike Tomlin. And it's going to be this trade right here and what happened in this year with AB, it will continually be brought up and discussed because Mike Tomlin lost control of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, because he's gone, will he be able to gain control? But it's fairly obvious that he did lose control of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
On the Raiders side of things, see, when you say, what if this was a year ago? What if this was John Gruden's initial move? Last year, before the season, they traded a third and a fifth for Martavis Bryant and A.J. McCarron.
They said they got the name wrong when they sent the paper, paper over.
It wasn't supposed to be Martavis Bryant. They were trying to get A.B. So think about that. Martavis Bryant and A.J. McCarron, same compensation, now got you Antonio Brown. No matter how critical of Gruden and the Raiders you've been, and we've been very critical on this show, this is, of course, a win. They get arguably the best receiver in football. They get him to a place he wanted to go to, which matters only because of his attitude.
Right.
We know he's going to work hard no matter what, but how much of a, quote, distraction, unquote, will he be? And for the Raiders, there is an element of the Dak Prescott-Amari Cooper trade to this in my eyes, which is if they don't get Kyler and if they don't get Haskins in this year's draft, they will be going with Derek Carr. And Gruden will need to determine if he wants to continue forward with Derek Carr after this year if they don't use one of those first-round picks on a quarterback. Keep in mind, in 2020, they still have an extra first-round pick in that year's draft because of the Khalil Mack trade. So the Raiders could potentially be in the quarterback business a year from now. But now they'll have fair information on Carr because you weren't going to get fair information on Carr with the wide receiving core you had beforehand. And the other part of it is Mike Mayock, and I'm glad you brought him up. Because I had real questions about. I know his ability to evaluate players because I've watched him do it for a decade plus. But there's a whole nother part of being a general manager and being a front office guy, which is one is the player evaluation. The other is the player transaction, the player contract, trade compensation. And for the Raiders to not be pushed into, listen, you got a first rounder for Amari Cooper. We want that first rounder for Antonio Brown. That's clearly the Raiders held their ground.
Right.
They said, oh, you got a Friday deadline? Okay, we'll let that deadline pass. And once that deadline passed, the Raiders, I think, realized the Steelers are up against it.
Right.
They don't want that bonus to come due. And they were able to get Antonio Brown for the minimal possible compensation you could get a player of this caliber for that doesn't have, that isn't, you know, facing some trial this offseason, that could be facing a year-long suspension. They got him for 35 cents on the dollar. It's a huge win for them.
So, you see, you brought up Mike Tomlin, which is interesting, and what didn't work between Tomlin and AB. Now, Antonio Brown is going to have a very different coach, a very different personality, with probably a different stronghold on that Oakland Raiders team. How do you think those two are going to mesh?
I don't have any clue. I mean, John Gruden hasn't really had a lot of high-profile players. You'll go back to his days in Oakland when he had Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, when Jerry came over from San Francisco and played with them. They had the outstanding season. Rich Gannon, MVP of the league. They put up tremendous numbers as a group. But I don't know what kind of offense they're going to run. I don't know if they're going to be three receivers. I don't know if the offensive line can hold up. I know how Antonio, how he thrives. He thrives in a three-receiver offense. He has to be able to play all up and down the lineup. You have to be able to hide him. He's also, you got to run some routes for him where he just gets the ball and he's able to get yards after the catch. So, right. To me, I know what AB does. What is Gruden going to do? Don't know that. Their best receiver right now happens to be their tight end. Are they going to lose him in free agency? How much more football does Jordy Nelson have left in him? So, I don't know what system John is going to. I know how AB thrives and how he's become the best receiver in the NFL.
That's the football part of it. And then the personalities part of it is I watched John Gruden win a Super Bowl with Keyshawn Johnson. And that Super Bowl hangover honeymoon lasted all of 9 games the following season before Keyshawn got sent home, deactivated for the final 7 games of the season.
Yeah, I would say he won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay, and Keyshawn was on the roster.
Oh, correct. I totally agree with that. I wasn't attributing Keyshawn as the main factor behind that Super Bowl. That was a defense-dominated team, but that was a Tampa Bay team that, prior to Gruden getting there, had given up 2 number ones for Keyshawn. His first year there, they win a Super Bowl, all collectively, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, sure. Lynch, all those guys. And then by the midway point of next season, go home, we'll keep paying you. We'd rather you be anywhere but here. Gruden doesn't have a long history that I'm aware of gelling with big-time personalities, particularly
or having a long leash, too.
Correct. Particularly on the offensive side of the ball. Like, those Tampa teams had some big-time personalities on defense, but Gruden didn't seem to be meddling with that nearly as much. So, but that was also 18 years ago, 15 years ago. So how much has he evolved? How much has he changed? That first year in Oakland, he seemed to push a lot of the big-time personalities out the door. Was that a humbling moment for him? Or was this as simple as, even if it's not with his philosophy, see, wait, we can get this player for that? How could we possibly say no, especially when they had the cap space to give Antonio the contract he wanted?
Look, for us to think there's not going to be some dust-up, there's going to be some dust-up. There's going to be some problems. They're going to have some issues on the sideline. How they go forward, to me, is how does Gruden handle an elite player who draws a lot of attention, and how does AB handle the transition from what he was doing in Pittsburgh, where he was frequently late, marching to his own beat, doing things that no one on the staff knew what he was going to do, within the offense, doing some freelancing and getting away with it for a number of years. Who is he going to be when he shows up to the Oakland Raiders? Because typically when you see someone who has that type of personality, when they change, typically there's a change in attitude. Will he get back to being known as the hardest working guy for the Raiders? Because that's who he is also. But which guy shows up? That's going to be the question that he's going to have to answer.
During this football season at the trade deadline, the Houston Texans traded a 4th and a 7th for Demaryius Thomas. Right before last season, Jarvis Landry was traded for a 4th and a 7th. for Antonio Brown to be available for a third and a fifth, and for him to be available for a team, it's not like Buffalo was trading for him a third and a fifth where you're like, okay, we're getting him, but how, what version are we getting? This is one of his preferred destinations. He got his money. He's going to, they are looking for a face of the Oakland Raiders for the move to Vegas. He now is, I would say, head to head with Derek Carr, is the only two realistic options for that, along with Gruden. This is a huge win for Oakland. For the Steelers, to double back on C's point from earlier, are they going to look back on, wait, how did the big three B's era end? With Le'Veon Bell sitting out a year, with Antonio skipping the final week, and then us trading him for 35 cents on the dollar, that's how
that era ended. They would win a championship. I said it for the last couple years. I didn't think collectively all the things they had going on off the field, the selfishness and the me, look at me, that they have there on that team. I didn't think. So I thought it will definitely be they underperformed.
And there was this narrative that, well, the Steelers just do things differently. That's their family. Well, it turns out doing things differently, at least for them, did not work out. This very public divorce has finally come to an end between Antonio Brown and the Steelers.
Alarm! The willies! The heebie-jeebies! Panic! There are dozens of words for fear, but just one for an exceptional home security company to stop fear at your front door. SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe is home security that knows it feels good to fear less. This is award-winning 24/7 protection that protects your home through it all, through blizzards, blackouts, and of course, burglars. SimpliSafe has won awards from all the tech experts that count. SimpliSafe has no contract, no hidden fees, and most importantly, no gotchas. And they always keep prices fair and honest. Thanks to SimpliSafe, fear has no place in a place like home. Try SimpliSafe with free shipping and free returns. You'll get a 60-day risk-free trial as well. Order now and have your home protected within a week. Go to simplisafe.com/FTF to get started today. That's simplisafe.com/FTF. Be sure to go there so they know we sent you. simplisafe.com/FTF.
LeBron James never had to deal with an injury. He's never missed that many games. He's never had to be a leader and it failed. He's never tried to get someone to come to that magnitude and degree and that publicized and that didn't work. So maybe this has taken a toll. Maybe not to the degree of what another executive says, but isn't it on the board that things are just crumbling and falling apart behind the scenes?
Well, sure, this has been, I mean, I don't know about crumbling and falling apart behind the scenes, but the problem for the Lakers right now is they don't have enough good players. I mean, people watch the game on Saturday night. LeBron played 28 minutes because they're doing this minutes restriction. In those 28 minutes, in addition going 30, 10, and 12, the Lakers outscored Boston by 11 points. In the 20 minutes he did not play, they got outscored by 24 points. Such is life when Kuzma's out, when Ingram's out, when Lonzo's out, when Ingram, and we'll talk about it more, but when Ingram and Lonzo are going to be out for the remainder of the season, like, you just don't have enough high-level or even mediocre NBA players to compete, even if LeBron is playing well. And I don't think anyone would criticize his level of play on Saturday night, or in particular his level of play on the offensive end, since he came back from the injury.
Well, since he came back from the injury, I mean, the first few games were very, very sluggish. He's definitely not playing at his playing weight. Saturday night against the Celtics, he did look better. And I'm the one that said that LeBron needs to sit down. I believe also LeBron's playing, not only for playing for pride, because he wants to be able to show, because he looked a lot more energetic, because the season's over with. Like, this season is lost. Like, you are right. You don't want to blame it on LeBron, but this Lakers season has fallen apart. And you can go from ownership to the front office, to the coaching staff, and LeBron James. And LeBron James in that. Because when you sign LeBron at this stage, we don't expect him to get hurt. Oh, everyone gets hurt. Well, he's LeBron James. He's not supposed to get hurt. So that was a huge part to these younger players. And that Anthony Davis thing, that helped the season fall apart in its totality. Veteran players, young players, and LeBron admitting, yeah, me and AD talked about this summer, did not help.
All right, time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Joel Embiid had a strong return from his knee injury, put up 33-12 in a Sixers win over the Pacers. Both the Sixers and Pacers now tied for that third spot in the Eastern Conference. Nick, put a grade on Joel Embiid's day yesterday.
I give Joel an A, first game back. The defense in the second half, and he's the key of that, was the story of this game. The Pacers scored 30 second half points. That's remarkable by Philly in a very important game because that three seed out east is critical to avoid that first round 4-5 matchup. So I give Joel an A.
Oh, he was excellent. I like the fact that they're going to play him in 4- and 5-minute stints. You could see it took some time to get his win. But, man, 28 minutes, 33 points right there. That's getting the most of it. True superstar. I believe, man, he's got the charisma. He's on the board for the next face of the NBA.
So he can be the first international player to ever do it.
Well, he's more American than international.
Because of the college experience?
Well, not college, because how he goes about his business.
Okay.
He's a very American.
Okay.
Take a break. Coming up, is it time to start worrying about the Warriors? That's next on First Things First.
He's saying it's an American thing to try to slide into Rihanna's DMs.
No, not Rihanna, man. Nobody trying to slide into the DMs.
In 5 days, two of the best pound-for-pound fighters on the planet put their perfect records on the line at AT&T Stadium as Errol Spence Jr. takes on Mickey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order now. Not right this second, but after the show would be a better time. Time for us to go viral. The biggest story of the weekend was Antonio Brown getting traded to Oakland. Here's what AB's son, Otto, thought about him being traded.
Otto, you ready? You ready? You ready to go, son? Where we going? We going to the Oakland Raiders? You ready?
So the son, Otto, did not get the dad's gift of gab, clearly.
No, that's a cute kid, and we've seen some videos of him playing football.
He's good.
And absolutely.
He's good.
No, he's a cute kid.
Yeah.
AB could take maybe some PR lessons from the young Otto.
Like,
just flash that
more?
Big smile. Don't say quite as much. People will say nice things about you.
Less is more.
Yeah, he's not as cute as the kid, though.
No. Well, obviously, he's not as cute as the kid. Got a good smile, though.
Good stuff there. All right, time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Now that former Steeler Antonio Brown is settled, attention turns to former Steeler Le'Veon Bell. Rumors are flying about as free agency approaches. Derek Carr started following Bell on Twitter after the Raiders traded for AB. Nick, you think Bell could sign in Oakland?
I'd say it's a possibility. I wouldn't think it's likely. And even if John Gruden embraces the idea of bringing in Antonio Brown for that rock-bottom compensation, trying to all of a sudden bring in Steelers West without as high level of a quarterback, to me, would be a bad idea. Like, I think these are two great players, but I don't know if you want to, after you usher out two of your most high-character guys in a locker room in Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper in one offseason, bring in the real question mark of AB and a guy in Le'Veon Bell, who I don't know if it's a character question mark, but maybe decision-making in regards to the drug policy question mark. I wouldn't bring them both in.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with him playing for the Raiders, but they just have more priorities. They need a rusher. Remember Khalil Mack? Yeah. That big gap that he left in the defense, it's still there. They still need a playmaker safety. So they still have a number of problems, offensive line. So running back, potentially a quarterback, it's one of many needs. But I wouldn't have a problem with them playing together. It's just not the best fit.
All right, to the Cowboys now. Veteran linebacker Sean Lee will be back in Dallas for the 2019 season. That after agreeing to terms on a one-year, $3.5 million restructured deal to stay with the Cowboys. The injury-prone Lee will turn 33 this summer. See, was this a good move?
Well, it was a good move for him, for Dallas. I believe that with their two linebackers that they have, both of them Pro Bowl-level players, it's nice to have a veteran who can play one, two, three spots in case there's an injury. But will he be injured? I believe in playing less snaps, it should be able to help him out, and he should be a great special teams player. So for $3 million, it's a good buy.
We knew that Sean Lee was not going to be on the Cowboys at $7 million, which is what his cap hit and salary, his price tag was going to be before the restructure. We thought it was, or at least I thought it was on the board, he would be cut entirely. I think this is probably the best of both worlds. We know Jalen Smith was excellent last year. See if he continues that form. And Leighton Vander Esch was amazing as a rookie. See if he continues that form. And Sean Lee as a leader and as a veteran and someone in that meeting room, that's worth the money.
Him
as
and
well.
Jason Witten, one on the offensive end, one on the defensive side to give him more leadership.
To the NBA now. Sixers and Pacers duked it out yesterday. Sixers dominated thanks to Joel Embiid. He returned to action after missing 8 games. He had 32 points, 12 assists. The Sixers move into a tie now with Indiana for the third best record in the East. Nick, how dangerous is Philly when Embiid is playing like this?
Listen, Embiid was excellent. The defense was suffocating in the second half. Indiana scored 30 points. Embiid with the 33 points, 12 rebounds was a great return for him. And C, very important in the standings. Celtics, Pacers, Sixers, two of them are going to be in the 4-5 line.
Yep.
So right now the Sixers got up to the 3 line tied with the tiebreaker over Indiana. Enormous game for them because they don't want to be playing in that first round 4-5.
Right. There's a number of things that make Philly a tough matchup. They lead the NBA in attendance. They over 20,000. The only NBA team has over 20,000. Also, their ability for Joel Embiid to get you in foul trouble, and they got 4 starters that shoot over 80% from the free throw line. Everyone, of course, Ben Simmons.
Yeah, everyone but Ben.
Moving on
Joel
to the
too
Lakers
is a big
now.
Name, which is huge. Sorry.
More bad news to go with the existing bad news that there has been the regular season. Both Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball were shut down for the remainder of an already disappointing year. Neither will be needed for the playoff run the team will most likely not be making. Nick, what does this mean for the Lakers now moving forward?
All right, so the Ingram thing is a real big problem, and it's a scary injury, and I understand. Listen, it's deep vein thrombosis. It's blood clot, and it's a blood clot in his arm and his shoulder area as opposed to in his leg, which is more typical. They reportedly caught it early. They think they can deal with it. Serena Williams had a blood clot, came back as fine. Chris Bosh had bad blood clots, and it ended his career. But for Ingram, let's just assume that because it was caught early, they can deal with it, right? Because that's the only way he's a key point for this team, either trade-wise or otherwise, moving forward. He was playing the best basketball of his life since the All-Star game. 6 games, averaging 28 points per game. That averaging. That after throughout the first year and a half of his career.
Never had more than 26
only,
or something.
Yeah, only eclipsed 26 points one time. And so I had said last week that one of the few bright spots for the Lakers was, with the season falling apart, the Anthony Davis trade, they had a more attractive package put together because they were going to have a lottery pick, a good lottery pick, and Ingram was looking better and better. And now for Ingram to have a real question mark about can he be the centerpiece of a trade when he has this injury, when he has this condition, if you will, and can't have 16 games of that level of production. Instead, it could just be an outlier. That's bad news. And for Lonzo, what if the Lakers' defense all of a sudden went back to being a top 12 defense when Lonzo came back? You could just say, all right, look, it was a Lonzo effect defensively, which makes him a more attractive trade piece, and said they won't see him on the court this year. So this is way worse news than the 5-game losing streak or anything else going on with the team. These two young players not playing again this year is a big deal and potentially hugely problematic for them in the trade market.
And if they decide to trade them, they can never say that they know what kind of players they're going to be. If they do put them in a trade, they'll be giving up on them early. You mentioned Ingram playing the best basketball of his career. They also, from the injury standpoint, what if they get lucky? What if they can't move Ingram? They get another free agent to come join LeBron, and then Ingram is able to pick up where he left off next season because of the injury that he can't get traded. Unfortunately for him, it's at bad timing. But also, with Lonzo out, with Ingram out, Kuzma's hurt. That's why I sit LeBron. I sit him on out. Like, why waste those minutes? You can't even justify, oh, well, the young guys, they're getting more chemistry, more time on the court. No, you're putting minutes onto a superstar that you're going to need those minutes. Right? I would actually be trying to tank right now to try to get the highest probability of winning the lottery so that I might be able to get Zion also.
And when you bring up the lottery, people should understand, it's tank. The better lottery odds, it's not just about Zion. Everyone wants Zion, but it's the better chance of getting the second pick, the third pick, getting a top 6 pick.
But he's the only
pick.
Player that people are mentioning.
No, of course. Yes. I'm just for the audience because they might see, if the Lakers, to C's point, if they fall 2 more places in the standings, they all of a sudden would have a 25% chance of a top 4 pick. So even if their chance of Zion is a couple percent, like the ability to get, well, there's Ja Morant, There's Zion. There's R.J. Barrett. There's three guys that people consider blue chippers.
And it's more of an asset.
Right, and it is much more attractive in a trade. One of the arguments I had to not shutting down LeBron is you don't know if you're going to be able to trade these guys. You don't know if you're going to trade all of them or any of them. So more court time with him with these young players is relevant.
That, because of course, players now, aren't even on. Yeah,
right, that's now out the window. Like, that is, you. We didn't know at the time Ingram was going to have any type of serious situation, and it was being reported they thought Lonzo might be back this week. They're now both done for the year. So that argument as to why LeBron should play doesn't qualify, because LeBron playing with the Caruso and Jonathan Williams, that Mo Wagner, that's irrelevant.
Quick question about Lonzo Ball. If we have some semblance of an idea of who Ingram was, especially since we've seen him after the All-Star break, is the jury still out on Lonzo Ball? He's missed a big part of this season. He seems to be kind of injury prone. Do we know what kind of player he is, or do you need to see another year or so before you could clump him into?
Oh, at least another year. No, he's got a problem. I mean, is he going to ever develop a jump shot? He can't shoot free throws. So ultimately, like, how high is his ceiling in the NBA? Now, he did become their best defender, but you don't spend a lottery pick, typically a top five pick, for a guy to be a defensive specialist. So there's still so many questions as far as his overall game.
Yeah, Lonzo, he needed the full year two and a full year with LeBron at least to have any idea of was he going to live up to that draft stock. I would say right now the odds are he will never live up to the draft pick, but we don't know what he is. Like, he needs at least another full season under his belt.
All right, let's move on to the Warriors. Not a great weekend for the best team in basketball. That's because they lost to the second worst team in basketball last night. In fact, they've lost 6 of their last 10 games, and Kevin Durant left in the fourth quarter last night with an ankle injury. He was overheard in the tunnel yelling, "We need to be playing championship basketball." However, Klay Thompson had a different take. Take a listen.
I expect our crowd to be a little more into it too. Like, I know it's not the playoffs, but it is our last go around at Oracle. At least you can stand up or something. We make a good play, especially in the beginning. We need that energy, especially this time of the year. It's hard to conjure up energy every single night because you're looking forward to the playoffs and that run. So we expect our fans to kind of, you know, bring that from the jump. It's like us, though. You can't bring it every night, but still, it helps when it doesn't matter if we're playing the Suns or the Bucks, whoever it is. We need that energy from them because we feed off that.
We don't hear a lot of sentiment from Klay Thompson generally, but a lot of emotion after this loss. How alarming is the Warriors' recent slump, CC?
It's not alarming to me. Like, we've seen teams, the reason why teams have a hard time putting together 3 or 4 seasons in a row at a championship level, because you get distracted. It becomes very, very difficult. The expectations change. The players, even their expectations have changed as far as going to the arena. It's the same arena, but they're not putting on the same performance they put on the last 3 or 4 years. So the fans are reacting in that way. I take exception to what he was saying, because I was watching this game, and the Warriors got off to their typical start, had a nice double-digit lead in the first quarter. But they gave up 40 points.
In the second quarter.
So their defense is not nearly on the level. Now, we haven't seen all the players playing well together. I would say Iguodala is not the same player. Sean Livingston is not the same player off the bench. Draymond, as an offensive player, is not nearly the same. So, Clay, when you're talking about the people at Oracle, because I'm sure they're the same people. All right, now, do they come to the game with different expectations? They might, but what they've seen on the court is a different Warriors team. They're not as deep as they have been, so the basketball that they're playing, even based on their record, as you can see, is not up to the standard that these fans have been used to. You got them spoiled, Clay.
And listen, I really, really like Klay Thompson. This, to me, was a foolish comment. He said it. He said, he's like, listen, obviously we can't bring it every night, but hopefully the fans could. That's not how this works. Right. And, like, when the Warriors have made it clear that they are going to take the regular season the last few years kind of for granted, some nights your fans are going to. Now, it's not even confusing, it's almost predictable about the Warriors at this point, was their games this weekend. I said last week that if they were the Warriors team that we all thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year, they'd blow out the Nuggets. They would remind everybody of that. They would have a real intensity. They would understand the one seed is on the line on Friday night with the team trying to chase them, and they would play some of their best basketball. And they had a near 20-point lead at halftime, and they beat the Nuggets by 17 points. But it's like the moment they did that, it's been since February 12th since they've won back-to-back basketball games. Think about that. It's almost been a month since they won back-to-back games. But the other point you made, C, about Draymond. All right, so Draymond obviously is out there for his defense, and they allow 40 points in the second quarter, and Draymond's defense has not been up to the level it had been in recent years. But if we show the last meaningful play of the game, this is where Draymond has been killing them. Let me just set the stage a bit. Steph's bringing the ball up the court. They're down 3 points. Steph is double-teamed the entire time. And when he throws it to Draymond, you can see it. No one is guarding Draymond, and he didn't even look to the basket. It's a three-point game. The 73-win season, Draymond shoots that ball. 2 years ago, post-73-win season, he at least turns and faces, so they have to collapse on him, and you can go, good shot, great shot. Draymond is being guarded on that possession like a Ben Simmons. Like, we know you're not shooting, so we can just use the man away from you. That, once Kevin Durant goes out of the lineup, as he did midway through the fourth quarter, all of a sudden that offense can be quelled even with the great Steph Curry on the court. Like, that play right there is telling, because guys are just saying, all right, Draymond, no problem whatsoever. He was 38% the 73-win year. He was 34% the following season. Now he's under 25%, and guys in big spots are guarding him accordingly.
Steph Curry said after the game, the difference between this year and last year is, yeah, last year we had a little slide, but we were injured. This year we're having the slide. We're all healthy. It seems like that's an issue right now. They can't seem to get it all together. Is that how it feels to you, see, watching this year and watching last year, that they can't quite put it all together?
Well, last year they did have a built-in excuse. And last year they still played with more energy. You didn't see the inconsistency this late in the season when all the guys were healthy. But they really have a problem, because we won't ever be able to give them enough credit, because what a collection of shooters they have is really special. But, man, they were a great defensive team. And that's how you win championships, because you can't shoot threes every night and depend on it. Ask Houston when they went cold last year. You have to be able to play some defense. And that is what made the Warriors so special. That's what has made them one of the best teams, not only of talent, but as far as record. And that's why you could put them in would this team beat the Bulls? Would this beat the old Lakers? Because on the defensive end, they've been special.
On that note, in the last 30-plus years, only two teams have won a championship without a top 10 defense. One of the Shaq, Kobe, Lakers, and LeBron's team in Cleveland. The Warriors right now are the 14th ranked defense in basketball. So they're not going to get up into the top three as they had been early on. But if you stay out of the top 10, historically speaking, you're in the danger zone as far as being a championship team.
The New England Patriots slowly coming down from their Super Bowl high. The reality of free agency has sunk in. Yesterday, they lost two key pieces from last year's championship team. Defensive end Trey Flowers is expected to sign with the Detroit Lions, where he will be reunited with former Patriots coach Matt Patricia. And left tackle Troy Brown will sign a deal with the Raiders. Let us dive into free agency, CC. We'll start with you. How confident are you that the Patriots will be, well, absolutely fine after losing these two pieces?
I mean, not concerned at all. The Patriots made these players. Trey Flowers, he's been in the Patriots system for a number of years, having his best season this year, where they were able to, as a group, help him manufacture those 9 sacks and that have him coveted as a free agent, because there's such always a premium put in free agency on quarterbacks and on guys that can rush the passer. From the other standpoint, as far as Trent Brown, he was a guy that had a lot of talent, but they wouldn't say he was an underachiever. In New England there, on the left side, we didn't know he was going to be able to replace Nate Solder and be able to do the great job that he did. But Dante Scarnecchia, we keep mentioning his name. He's one of the best coaches that people don't talk about. What he did with him there in New England, allow him most of the time to solo block. They didn't have a tight end over there where he's helping. They didn't have a fullback or someone chipping. So I expected New England to allow these players to hit free agency. And in free agency, what do the bad football teams do? They continue that they'll stay on this cycle of being either mediocre or poor. That meaning they're going to always be looking for free agents. They throw money at guys. They overpay in free agency. So they've been like, wow, man, is Trey Flowers, is he worth it? One of my coaches in pro football taught me, you're worth what someone will pay you. Now, most of the time, people think they're worth more, and they don't get it. But neither one of these players will be able to live up to these contracts. So this is what happens in free agency.
Especially the first 3 days of it. The first 72 hours, it's an auction. And anyone that's ever been to an auction knows if you win the auction, by definition, that means you said, I will pay an amount that everyone else in the room said, I can't pay that much for this. And that, listen, Trey Flowers, if you look at his knockdown numbers, because his sack numbers are not that impressive, but his knockdown numbers over the last 3 years, same as DeMarcus Lawrence, four more than Jadeveon Clowney, so you can see why he was sought after. People get the sticker shock of 5 years, 80 to 85 million. That's, you better be DeMarcus Lawrence at least to make that a valuable deal. But why else is someone going to go sign with the Detroit Lions? Like, not just because he played with Matt Patricia. Trent Brown, we went through this exactly 1 year ago. Nate Solder, the former Tom Brady left tackle under Dante Scarnecchia with the New England Patriots, becomes the highest paid offensive lineman in the history of football. Mm-hmm. We now have a situation where Trent Brown becomes the highest paid left tackle in the history of football. The New England Patriots paid him $2 million last year. He's now going to get $36 million over the next 2 years guaranteed from the San Francisco 49ers. From the Oakland Raiders, pardon me. This is the situation that these teams are in. It is very hard to get bargains in early days of free agency. You just have to accept we're paying a 25% premium at a minimum. The Pats, on the other hand, see, they drafted Isaiah Wynn a year ago. Now, we don't know what he'll be, but they spent a first-round pick on him.
Yeah, they got two high draft picks. The defensive back from Florida, he ended up getting hurt. They got two of their top three picks coming back after not making contributions, so they'll develop those guys the way that New England typically would do.
And on Trey Flowers, it's not a draft pick. I think Michael Bennett will be as productive next year in New England, if not more, than Trey Flowers will be in Detroit. Michael Bennett, I think, has at least one more year of very high-level football left in
him. Yeah, look at his knockdowns. They're very comparable to what they gave up there with Trey. I believe he's a better player, and I believe he's very, very smart, very, very savvy, and watch how he fits into that New England system. So I know New England got a very good player at the right price.
Well, and that's where, I don't ever begrudge any player making money. I would so much rather the players have the money than the owners. Like, I got no problem with it. But in a hard cap sport, the money matters. And Michael Bennett, on a one-year contract for less than $10 million, is such a greater value proposition than Trey Flowers with $50 million guaranteed at $16 to $17 million per.
And I think they have Bennett for the next 2 years under $20 million.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. But they're not tied to him after the first year. So if they want to move on from him,
yes,
it's essentially a team option.
Or you could keep him because I believe he's going to have success.
I know we talk about this a lot, but how are the Patriots so much better than almost every other team at evaluating talent, knowing when to cut a player, when to bring in a guy that other teams have given up on? It? Because they seem to just know the X's and O's of the business of football better.
Well, I have to correct you. They do know football better than anyone else. They don't know talent better. Like, they don't, because they don't have a very, very talented roster. Now, what they do is they believe in their system. They believe in their coaches, will coach their guys up, and then allow them to be able to play the best football. Detroit, because they have Matt Patricia, he's very, very fortunate. But other players, we have seen Chandler Jones being one of the most talented. We have seen these players leave New England, and you start to see you're a system player. This is what free agency, it distorts fans, it distorts coaches, it distorts who that player really is. Because all players have weaknesses. But in free agency, because of the sticker price, and just like, well, wow, this guy's making that. Well, the salary cap for one is $188.2 million. So we shouldn't be like, oh, man, these owners are broke, all right? The market will bear these type of prices. That's why the owners are paying these type of prices. So we should expect, I think the salary cap went up $10 million over last year. It will continue to grow. New England, they understand the ramifications. They have the type of deal, though, when you have your quarterback and he's not eating up $30 million of the cap, they have such a huge advantage. Now, they have some other advantages, but how they manage Tom Brady and his salary is one of the things they do at a level, and that's the reason why they're the New England Patriots.
The thing that the Patriots, I think, do better than every other team, Jenna, is not talent evaluation, but understanding the business aspect of football and understanding, they understand the draft is a crapshoot. So you know what the best chance of winning that crapshoot is? Getting as many picks as possible. They understand that free agency, you tend to overpay. So they sit back. They never sign guys to contracts. that could become bad contracts. In the last 3 years, there's only one what I would consider risky contract they've signed a free agent to, Stephon Gilmore, that if he ended up being a bad player or getting repeatedly injured.
And it's almost like the chance they took when they went Revis, because they knew that a cover guy and what I can do as far as coverage, I'm willing to risk more money at that position than I typically would, but it gives me so much flexibility from a game plan standpoint.
And there's no other way to get that guy. So if you want to go get that guy, you're going to have to pay a premium. But the Patriots are so disciplined in not falling in love with what recency bias, what we saw last year, in believing in their system, that they will not overpay. And then they have the added benefit, because they're the Patriots, guys might at the end of their careers take a little bit less to play there.
Sure.
Guys might want to choose to go there.
Right. And what they do, Jenna, from a talent standpoint, they know your players maybe better than you know them.
Oh, so that's interesting.
And when you got Revis, where did he come from? Well, people say, oh, he came from Tampa Bay.
But the Jets.
From the Jets.
Yeah.
And where did Gilmore come from?
The Bills.
From the Bills. So guys inside
Les
their
Welker
division.
Was in the with the Dolphins.
I mean, guys in their division, they do that extra to be able to see how would this guy fit into New England. And there's a couple guys they've decided to pay, and those things have really worked out.
Look,
for them.
There aren't many teams where you could say, oh, you lost your starting left tackle and defense end. You're going to be just fine. It's got to just be the Patriots.
Welcome back to the show.
Former running back Wyatt Westbrook joins
Good
us.
To see you.
Like my brothers, they just go and go, and it's awesome.
How many brothers do you have,
Jim? I have one younger brother.
Oh, okay.
Well, and let me tell you, they are nothing like either one of you, but I love you guys as if you were my brothers.
Thanks,
All right,
Jenna.
Let's talk Odell Beckham Jr., Brian.
Me and you, the only brothers here. Jenna, tell me two brothers.
That's right.
Al Roker. No. That's one. Count him as two.
Brian, focus. Despite his star power, Odell, we're talking about, and his talent and his seemingly perfect personality fit here in New York, Odell Beckham Jr. is reportedly still on the trade block. GM Dave Gettleman addressed this earlier this season, saying, we didn't sign Odell to trade him, and yet the rumors are aplenty that he may be gone next season. Does this surprise you in any way, Brian?
You know, when you talk about putting special players around quarterbacks, Odell is one of the special guys that you want to put around him. But it comes down to this, and I think Pat Sherman, I know Pat pretty well with my time with him in Philadelphia, he wants good fits. He wants guys that want to buy into the program. He wants to buy into what we're doing as far as a team. And it just seems that Odell probably hasn't bought in to the team aspect of what Pat Shermer's just trying to present. The other part of that is he's one of the assets that you can go get a lot of pieces with. Your first-round pick, a second-round pick, some players. He's probably one of those only assets that you have on that Giants team that you can go get players with, because he's such a special player, and they want to build around the running back. They want to build around Saquon Barkley.
Well, and I think they know that Odell has had something of a wandering eye. Odell, I don't think it's breaking news to say that Odell has entertained the idea of what would it be like playing in Los Angeles? What would it be like playing with Tom Brady? What would it be like playing somewhere else? Not to say Odell has at any point demanded a trade. Odell signed that contract happily. Odell hasn't said, I don't want to be in New York. So he hasn't asked for a divorce, but he sure seems to be flirting with other people quite a bit. And that might make a team say, we won't actively try to trade you.
But we're not going to hang up on you if you call.
Right. We will let it be known that, you know, through sources that if you call us and knock us over. Now, are they in a situation like Pittsburgh where they would trade Odell for 30 cents on the dollar? I believe absolutely unequivocally not. I think it would have to be what the Cowboys got for Amari Cooper. I'm sorry, the Raiders got for Amari Cooper, and then some. I think it would have to be more than just a first-round pick, given what it would do to their salary cap with all the signing bonus hitting them immediately and the fact that they clearly want to compete for one more year with Eli Manning, and Odell's their only reliable, true wide receiver. Ingram's fine as a tight end. Saquon's great as a running back. But I don't think we should, even though Gettleman's been adamant, I didn't sign him to an extension to trade him, I don't think we should dismiss this reporter, dismiss the idea that he could be traded before the season. And if he is, some of it will be his own doing, in my mind.
Wait, let me ask you guys this, and you have to think this. Gettleman's always throwing this out there. We may trade him, we may trade him. Maybe this is a way for him to say, Odell, you need to start acting right and do things the way that we want to do it. Do the way that Pat Shermer, because we will trade you. And if you want to be here, you need to do it the right way. You need to do it our way. And that wonder or not, that's something that's important for coaches. You want buy-in. I want you to buy into our program. I want you to be here in the offseason. I want you to help our team get better. I want you to be a leader on our football team. I think they're trying to get all those things from Odell Beckham Jr. And the question is, can he give you that?
Well, I disagree with both of you. I'd be shocked if they trade him. I believe it would be an idiotic move for them to be able to trade him. His contract is just now starting, the new one. And based on what's going to happen this offseason, watch what happens to Michael Thomas in New Orleans. He's going to get a new deal. He's on his rookie deal. As a second-round pick, he's due a new deal after this. Julio Jones held out last year. Arthur Blank told me to my face, I'm going to take care of Julio. So Julio Jones sitting there at $11 million. Seeing Antonio, what he got at Oakland, something's going to happen. A.J. Green, he's in the last year, all right, at over 30. But, yes, A.J. Green is a commodity, nicest guy you ever want to meet. So look for A.J. Green to get a bump up.
Tyreek Hill.
And Tyreek Hill is going to be the highest paid of them all. So the landscape of the NFL and the salaries, when you look at where Odell's going to be,
he's going to be a bargain all of a sudden.
So why would I let him go? He is a once every generation type of player. And regardless of what you guys say, there's nothing that he has done that I'm going to let him out of this locker room, because you have to replace that productivity. And, man, those draft picks don't turn into Odell Beckham. He's one of the top three, top four wide receivers in the league right now, and he hadn't even hit his potential. Like, he's going to get a lot better than he is right now. Now, there is a thing with these wide receivers, like AB, one, everyone's not Julio Jones. Everyone's not Larry Fitzgerald. So you might still have some maintenance with some of these other guys that you – Julio Jones – people don't say anything, but he had a silent protest last year, okay? I ain't coming to the building until something is done. So is that more drastic than what Odell has seen? So for me, the Giants, I'd be shocked if they trade him, and the Giants are not doing themselves a favor by allowing these things to be out there. They should get ahead of it. Gettleman should always just say, no, he's not to be traded. He should be more emphatic than he has been every press conference. He should start it with Odell Beckham is not on the trade market. Now, that's not going to prevent you from getting your phone rang.
Making an offer.
All right. Now, someone gives you three number ones or something crazy like that, I can understand that. But right now, they are not doing themselves a favor by allowing this conversation to continue, because if you know a guy's got a wandering eye,
then nip it in the bud is your
squash
point.
It early.
Right.
The big question still has to be, can you win with this type of receiver? Julio, Larry Fitzgerald, A.B., Odell?
To me is a more honest conversation.
Well, teams still haven't won with those guys on their roster.
Absolutely.
So maybe Gettleman, maybe Shermer are saying.
What do you mean by those guys?
He means we haven't seen a Super Bowl champion with one of these superstar wide receivers in a very long time. Now, I would argue that we kind of did with the Falcons. Julio made the catch that should have won that damn Super Bowl, and they were in position, kick a field goal, and the game's over. Like, I don't buy into the idea that, well, because the last 11 Super Bowl champs haven't had one of the three best wide receivers in football, therefore that means you don't need them. In fact, they prevent you from winning. I think having great players helps you win championships. What, Steve?
Yeah, that's amazing, because you're into the numbers, and now the numbers don't tell your story, so now you don't believe in the numbers.
No. So I think there's I
believe great wide receivers are overrated.
Mm-hmm.
As far as putting the salary cap together and trying to win football games. Me and my guy Dusty, I'm sure you'll love this. Right now in the NFL, if you look at what's the best personnel, how you want to attack people, it's not with three wide receivers on the field. It's either a fullback and two tight ends, or two tight ends and one running back. Right now, if you want to attack offenses, because they spend all their time trying to stop nickel defenses. So I could have an argument, if I'm running an offense, yes, Chris Carter, Hall of Fame wide receiver, would you much rather be in with three wide receivers on the field or a fullback potentially and another tight end? I'm going to go the conventional route, because I believe it's easier to defend three wide receivers right now than the other aspect.
The idea there is when the whole league is zigging, you zag, right? When the whole league has gone to nickel defense, when the whole league has gone to small people and speed defensively, if we can now go the other way.
That's what New England did to the Rams in the Super Bowl.
It's exactly what New England did. And so the idea that trying to always be counterintuitive when the league has overcorrected in one direction, I think there is something to that. But when you say, I like the numbers, but the numbers don't tell my story. So last year, there was a narrative, which is, look at all the highest paid quarterbacks. and all those teams miss the playoffs. Maybe spending a lot of money on quarterback kills you. That, to me, was...
Well, Tom Brady's not one, so he's not going to be on the list.
Right. Aaron Rodgers got hurt.
Exactly. We had a few teams that didn't make the playoff. It was an odd year. You don't have 11 years with the other numbers.
Right, but it was not Julio's fault the Falcons didn't win that Super Bowl. And if they do, then that streak is broken, right? It was not Randy's fault.
Well, it's not a streak. It would have been like the numbers still say you shouldn't have a high pace. They would have one win.
Right. I do not believe, and you cannot convince me, that there is any correlation between an inability to win a championship and having a star receiver. Because we have seen so many teams with these star receivers come this close.
No, that's not the conversation. The conversation is, if I'm going to attack people from a salary cap standpoint, will I be better off utilized spreading that money around to the other positions, having a couple running backs, having two or three tight ends, having a fullback? I think that's what our conversation is.
Teams have been much more successful spreading the ball around, getting the ball to a lot of different people. To your point, the two tight ends, one running back, it's much easier, and you'll complete much more passes first, second down, getting the ball shorter
and
passes
the numbers say that.
To tight ends, to running backs out of the backfield, instead of trying to get the deep threat with the wide receiver. That's what the big play receivers are all about.
And the point you're making about you have to look at the value proposition given salary. I am all in on that. I totally agree with you. But that doubles back to the beginning of the conversation. Odell's about to be a bargain at $18 million per. Like, he was top of the market. That was brief. AB passed him. You mentioned three or four other guys that are going to pass him. So if you have...
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a bargain. I would call it a good price.
Okay.
You're not overpaying for it. Now, if he was making $10, $11 million,
AJ
Green?
I'll tell you this. If I'm Saquon Barkley, I want Odell Beckham Jr. on my team. 100%. You find a way to make that work somehow.
But do you all agree that Odell's most likely going to be a Giant to start?
I think someone would have to offer the Giants a first-round pick and something else. And something else legitimate. Like a first and a second. And then I think they have to have a very real conversation about it. I don't know that that offer's going to be made. But I don't think they're hanging up the phone.
Right.
Like, there are certain teams that are hanging up the phone if you call about a player.
Right.
The Giants, I think, are hanging up the phone if you call about Saquon. I don't think they're hanging up the phone.
Giants, I got a message for you. Trade Odell. Don't draft my man Haskins. Don't bring him up here to New York, man. Don't do us no favors, man.
Le'Veon Bell is headed to the New York Jets. 4 years, $52 million deal. 35 of those dollars are guaranteed. He will now make less per year, a little over $13 million, than he was slated to make under the Steelers franchise tag last year and less than other offers the Steelers had previously made him. But Le'Veon Bell has got a new chapter to start now. Put this on Instagram. Let's go, he said. Life's a gamble. Making reference to his new mixtape just came out, Catchy Tunes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Is
it a mixtape or an album?
It was probably an album, but I played my cassette player when...
I don't know what it was. I didn't know any of it. Jenna, you gave me information. Whether it was mixtape, album,
very good music that
limited EP, whatever it was. I didn't know that was the name of it.
All that being said, CC, we'll start with you. We'll put the album and the mixtape aside. What was your reaction to this deal?
I'm happy for him. Happy that it was able to get done. You're talking about a team as we approach free agency. The New York Football Jets, they had more money available at that time than anyone. And as you go through this and they start signing players, you went, man, are they going to get some offensive help for Sam Darnold? And I like the way first they started on the defense, able to get them some defensive help. But I like the fact that they have one of the best all-purpose running backs in football in Le'Veon Bell. His ability to be able to affect the game as a running back out of the backfield, as a premier pass catcher. That's the difference between him and the other running backs. You talk about Todd Gurley. Man, Todd Gurley, he's the best back in the NFL. Ezekiel Elliott, he might be the best pure runner, but the best combination running back is Le'Veon Bell. And he happens to play for the Jets. And it is a huge insurance policy that you're going to get the best out of Sam Darnold. So I'm glad they're able to help out the young quarterback to be able to give him a chance. I believe this team is being built the right way, nice and slow. So I like the pieces that they've added. They still can add a couple more pieces. Still offensive line, there's some question marks. But they're off to a great start getting the prize possession in free agency this year was Le'Veon Bell, and the Jets got him signed.
And I know a ton of the discussion is going to be the money and the money he didn't pick up last year, and we'll get to that. But on your point about helping out Sam Darnold, of the free agent wide receivers available, was Le'Veon Bell the best one? Now, I understand he's a running back, but if you look at the guys who are available as pass catchers in free agency, was Le'Veon Bell the best guy to help Sam Darnold in that regard as well? Because I know the Jets signed Jamison Crowder, but we talked about it when the Cowboys traded for Amari Cooper. Remember, like, we looked at the 2019 NFL free agent list, and wide receiver was not deep. If they weren't going to trade for AB, if they weren't going to trade for Odell the way we saw the Browns do last night, like, I think they got a great running back, but if you're trying to help Sam Darnold, not just because you can hand the ball off, I think Le'Veon Bell is up near the top of the list of any pass catcher that was available on the market.
Well, there weren't a lot of prime pass catchers available.
Right.
But it does speak to his overall ability. I think in the last 6 years, he's averaged 40 yards receiving a game. That's outstanding. But it not only helps Sam Darnold, because I think they're going to go with their young wide receivers on the outside. They tendered our boy Robbie Anderson.
They have Quincy Enunwa. Yeah, they signed Jamison Crowder.
Quincy outside. Crowder's going to play the slot. But what L. Bell does, he not only helps out the quarterback, but he helps out that offensive line. So he might be the best pass catching receiver available. That, you know, that's up for someone else to debate. But what he can do helps out that offensive line, and it helps out Sam Darnold.
So the Jets, they traded for Osemele, the offensive guard from the Oakland Raiders, was on the tail end of a very expensive contract. We mentioned that they assigned Jamison Crowder. They upgraded the defense with C.J. Mosley. They thought they were getting Anthony Barr. He ended up going, obviously, back to the Vikings. But this is the process, and the process has to be give Darnold some help. At the end of last year, Darnold, the last quarter of the season, played well. His passer rating jumped up 20-plus points. He only had one interception the final 4 weeks of the year. You were starting to see, okay, he's coming into his own after that foot injury. And so you now have a real difference maker on defense, or on offense, that defenses have to account for. And for Le'Veon on the money side of things, this is the most guaranteed money any running back has ever gotten, and he becomes, on an annual basis, the second highest paid running back in the league, just behind Todd Gurley. So even if it's shy of the $16 to $17 million per year that reportedly he had been looking for each of the last two offseasons, the $35 million guaranteed was right around the number both you and I said yesterday we thought his contract would end at, even if the annual value was higher. So maybe a little disappointment that he didn't get to $65 million, had to settle for around $53 million, but the guaranteed money is what was key. It's what the Steelers were not offering, and he got $35 million from the Jets.
Do you think L. Bell thought he would fetch more on the open market than he did?
Yeah, absolutely. Last night, talking to some people, the market wasn't there for him. Either from a, they were not going to make him a wide receiver, because that was one of the things that he wanted, why he didn't want the franchise tag. He said, I'm more than a running back, trying to reset the running back market. But he wasn't able to do that because teams didn't agree with him, and there's some other things teams didn't like. They didn't like the fact that he didn't play last year, didn't like the fact that he's been in the drug program, could be suspended. So there were a number of things that kept his annual salary out of being $17 million, $16 million, which a lot of people thought, because there were so many teams that had dollars available, it was some of the other stuff that prevented him from being able to fetch that big number.
When you see that this is what it took to get him, are you surprised the Colts didn't match this offer?
No, because if you read everything that the Colts have been saying, they don't want to sign high-priced guys. They looked at last year's free agency, and people who judged last year's free agency, people wouldn't know this, but they would say, man, the Colts were one of the best teams. They got a couple starters, Eric Ebron. They got some secondary help. Both of these guys were frontline players for them. Ebron played to a Pro Bowl level. They had said they want to do it nice and slow. They want to build it the right way. So even though you might think Indy's a good fit, I mean, you have to read the tea leaves. When they're saying they're going to build it nice and slow, they're not going to make that type of investment. So for me, I wasn't as high on Indy as I was on San Francisco and the Jets. Those are the two teams at the end of the day, not Baltimore. San Francisco 49ers, they made a bid for him. It wasn't as high, but the Jets were the biggest offer. So it wasn't like he took some type of discount.
No.
He went to the highest bidder.
He was always going to go to the highest bidder. I thought maybe the Colts or the Texans could have involved themselves in that high bidding. On the Colts' point, we saw with the deal they just gave Devin Funchess, where I think a lot of people think, wow, 1 year, $10 to $13 million for Funchess. The 1 year is the key there. The Colts clearly have the philosophy of, we are not going to give huge dollar multi-year deals. And so this would have, I guess, fallen in that category.
Well, they haven't found the player that they're going to give that deal to.
Correct, right. They're not going to rush to give that deal. So when you give Funchess a one-year deal, what you're essentially doing is rolling that cap space over to next year.
And you don't mess up your salary cap. You don't get T.Y. Hilton coming back asking for more money. Because if you pay him a lot more money than you're paying T.Y. Hilton, they don't have nearly the same resume. So they're making sure that they don't set a bad precedent for the team.
But the appetite for him wasn't where we all thought it was. He didn't get an offer from the Texans. The Ravens didn't make an offer. The Colts were clearly out of it. The Niners weren't really there at the end when they saw what the Jets were going to offer. Does that surprise you at all that at the end for a guy that's 27 years old and seemingly has a year of rest and has a whole future ahead of him?
Well, I think the year of rest clearly worked against him. And this is something Chris talked about a lot when he was taking the time off.
Football players play football. Basketball players, they hoop. We haven't seen people start taking time off, and we saw that enhance their career. So we got all these years of experience to think that he was going to be the one. The NFL looked at it and said, no, we don't think he's going to.
The people that run football teams clearly share that philosophy with Chris much more than what I was saying, which was I totally understood what Le'Veon Bell did last year. I totally understood the idea of not wanting to go back to a team where you'd been the most used running back on a per-game basis in NFL history, where you had no guarantee money after this season, where you could potentially be used as a rental car because they knew you weren't coming back because you thought you wanted, and by the way, he was right on the guaranteed money, you had a big guaranteed payday coming next. Now, if he would have known this is the contract offer he gets, would he have played last year? We'll never know the answer to that question. And what would he have gotten if he had played last year? Clearly, his best case scenario would have been play, stay healthy, stay productive, and then go get this contract.
And $14 million.
Of course. That's why it would have been. Now, his worst case scenario would have been play, suffer a significant injury, and only see that $14 million as significant earnings the rest of his career. But when he made the calculation, he and his agent, to not play last year, I think they thought it was going to be more like 5 years, $70 million, and that would compensate for the $14 million lost.
All right, Le'Veon Bell is headed here to New York. He will be a New York Jet, but more news out of New York. Big news, Odell traded to Cleveland. That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on Sirius XM. We'll be right back.
This Saturday night, don't miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. Two of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world put their perfect records on the line. Errol Spence Jr. takes on Mikey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship live from AT&T Stadium. Spence Jr. versus Garcia, Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order now.
All right, biggest story out of the NFL last night. Less than 2 weeks after Giants GM Dave Gettleman said the team didn't sign Odell Beckham to trade him, the Giants signed Odell Beckham and traded him. Beckham is headed to the Browns for a first and third round pick along with Jabril Peppers. No one more excited than Beckham's former LSU teammate Jarvis Landry, who sent out this picture on Instagram with the caption, "It feels good, OBJ, I love you, brother." Baker put this picture on the gram. You're right. Baker and his new weapons right here. Nick, what was your reaction to the deal? There was a lot on Instagram and Twitter from a bunch of players reacting, which we'll see in a little bit. But your reaction to the deal?
What an absolute win for the Cleveland Browns. This is a team that was 1-31 for two seasons and then fired their coach midway through last season. And now all of a sudden, they have the 8th best Super Bowl odds. According to sportsbooks in Vegas, they're at 14-1. They are right now.
They were 25-1 before. And they were. The day before they got Odell, and now 14-1.
And they were 100-1 to start last season.
Yeah.
And so it speaks to there is no 5-year plan in the NFL now. Turn it around quick. Get your quarterback, spend your money, turn it around quick. I love the move for Cleveland. For the New York Giants, it's very simple. It's just a total rebuild built around a 38-year-old quarterback, of which there is no track record of that ever working
ever
in football at any level, not even senior league football. You don't want to rebuild around a 38-year-old quarterback. It is this is the type of move where if a coach or a GM ends up getting fired when the article is written about in the New York Post or the New York Daily News, in the first couple paragraphs they mention 13 days after committing to Odell Beckham long-term and 10 months after giving him the biggest contract in franchise history for a non-quarterback, they traded Odell Beckham Jr. for the 17th pick, the 95th pick, and Jabril Peppers a box safety. Like, that is the Giants going to have to prove it to me now. They've got two players from every draft they made prior to 2016. A long snapper and Eli, who evidently is going to outlast everybody. I don't know what the Giants are doing. I love the move for the Cleveland Browns. That was my initial reaction when I heard about it last night.
It's a great move for the Cleveland Browns. The best move that they've made as a franchise. I would say I would take the top five moves in franchise history, and this one would be one of them. One of their biggest moves when they lost the franchise, getting the franchise awarded back, that they were going to have football. But since then, I would say this is probably the biggest decision. Now, people will say, man, the Baker Mayfield, but them putting together this team. So let's give credit right from the top, because when good organizations do well, we always give credit to the ownership. Jim Haslam, as the owner there, man, he's gotten a lot of criticism through the years. He's made a lot of mistakes. The other businesses that he's in, he did not know that the NFL was the way. So he's made some colossal mistakes. Executives, coaches, players, how he was doing things. But he has the right guy in Dorsey as the general manager and allowing him to be able to, operate with the flexibility to build them a monster. Like, they have woke up a sleeping beast in Cleveland, and you have to be able to give credit to the ownership there in Dorsey. Dorsey will be executive of the year. If you look at what he's done in the short period of time, transforming this team from one of the worst franchises to being now they have legitimate Super Bowl. Now, to me, this is not one of those off seasons like the Washington Redskins had, where we see people go out and spend $100 million in trying to buy a Super Bowl. No, this is someone trying to buy themselves a franchise and get some credibility back in the NFL with the young talent that they have. If you look at their star players, they got so many great players under the age of 25. They have more great players under the age of 25 than anyone in the National Football League. I'm excited about the Cleveland Browns, and I'm really excited because one of the best talents we've seen come into the league in Baker Mayfield, he's been getting ready to get supported like no quarterback that I've seen, because this reminds me of Troy Aikman when he was in Dallas. And he took that beat down. They end up adding Michael Irvin to that team because he was injured, so he wasn't there when they lost. And then they drafted Emmitt Smith, and they had the triplets going forward. This is the way the Cleveland Browns can look. They can look a lot like the Dallas Cowboys look in those great teams.
When C mentions triplets, obviously they've got Nick Chubb, but they signed Kareem Hunt. Now, Kareem Hunt is going to probably be suspended at the beginning of the year, but John Dorsey, a guy who was in Kansas City when they got Kareem Hunt, from a football perspective, that is a great move for them. So you also add the other things they've done this offseason. How about bringing in Olivier Vernon?
Absolutely.
How about yesterday during the show, Sheldon Richardson came over for them. So all of a sudden you are building. When we've seen other teams have a monster free agent or monster offseason, it's usually by, well, the way the Giants did a few years ago on defense, you're overpaying for your talent. The other aspect for this for the Browns just quickly is because the Giants paid the whole signing bonus.
Yeah.
They get Beckham at $15 million per year. Now, I know there's questions, how long will he play under $15 million per year, if he will come to them at some point and want more money. But right now...
Oh, he will definitely come to them before this contract is over with.
Oh, before it's over, for sure. Like, it just is kicking in now. There's no... But he won't come to them this year.
We don't know that, Nick.
Okay.
There are some stuff out there that he's not happy with the overall number. All right? There was a report last night. So it's not that he might not report, but he might not be happy after seeing Antonio. Julio Jones is getting ready to get a bump. Michael Thomas in New Orleans.
And Tyreek's going to reset the market.
So. Yeah, so don't just.
Okay, I would be surprised if he goes to him this season. My point is, regardless, they're not overpaying right now for Beckham. They got him for 15. They got him for 5 years, $72 million, as the contract is currently written, with nothing guaranteed after this season.
We had some questions about Jarvis Landry last year and what he was able to do. But Adam Henry, the receiving their receivers coach, actually coached both these guys, Landry and Odell, back at LSU. How potent does that make this offense now, that those two guys can work well together, and you have Baker, and you have what you already had from last year?
Yeah, they have a tremendous amount of things that you want as a coach. You have people in the building that are very familiar with Odell, and their wide receiver coach is a huge part of that. That's why John Dorsey, because I met with him last year. I did week number 14, Cleveland versus Carolina. I met with the wide receiver coach, and we talked about Odell. And he wanted Odell. He wanted to be able to trade for Odell at some point. He likes him. He's been knowing him since he was a kid. And Odell's had great success with him. He got the best out of Jarvis Landry and the rest of that receiving core last year. I don't think people understand when you're a young quarterback and you are able to add weapons. You got a stellar running back in Nick Chubb from University of Georgia coming off a rookie season. Offensive line that is really underrated. Underrated enough that they could trade one of their guards for Olivier Vernon, because that's how much talent that they have up front. So their tight end is emerging as a threat. He can run. So, man, they got a track team. They can throw some people at you offensively. But let's not forget, I believe that Cleveland Browns, kind of hidden gem to this, their defense, I believe, is going to be a top 10 defense. Oh. This is, we'll talk about the offense, but their defense is full of young playmakers also, and trading for Olivier Vernon was kind of the start of getting some more young players on defense, I believe, is going to be very, very good.
And that goes back to your original point, which is credit to John Dorsey. One of the blue chippers on that defense was a guy when they drafted him, I was like, wait, what? At four, you're taking Denzel Ward. You're not taking Bradley Chubb. You're taking the corner out of Ohio State. He was awesome last year. We know how good Myles Garrett is. That guy is 12 sacks a year waiting to happen if it's not already happening. Then you add, you find a pass rusher in Olivier Vernon through the trade market. You find Sheldon Rankin or Sheldon Richardson through free agency. Like, there you go now. Now, all of a sudden, I mean, those are, I would say, two no doubt blue chippers in Garrett and Ward, and two whatever one degree below blue chipper is in the two players they added in free agency, in Olivier Vernon and Sheldon Richardson. So there's your defense.
Right.
And on offense, Baker, last quarter of the season now, top six in passer rating, top eight in yards per attempt. Like, Baker was good immediately, but he was really good late. This is a team that, man, all they need is Joe Thomas to put 80 pounds back on and come out of retirement.
That's not going to happen. But I can guarantee you today, what, March 13th, Baker Mayfield woke up and said, man, I'm feeling dangerous.
Oh, yeah, he did.
No doubt about it.
Browns best team in the division right now?
Oh, they were best team yesterday.
Kyler Murray was front and center yesterday at Oklahoma's Pro Day. All eyes on what he would and could do after skipping drills at the Combine. By all accounts, he performed well, completing 61 of 67 passes. Murray didn't get measured, doing nothing to quiet those who said his measurements were inflated at the Combine, you know, because your height is obviously up for interpretation. Our own Joel Klatt was there, said Kyler has nothing to worry about.
He threw the ball so well today. It was effortless. He threw it as well as Baker did last year, or better at times. He showed a quick release, great RPMs on the ball, threw it really well down the field. Firmly believe Arizona's going to take Kyler. He was terrific today. Effortless thrower of the football.
CeCe, do you think Kyler solidified himself as the top pick in the draft after his pro day?
I think that when people just stop listening to all the noise and you just look at the film and you start to analyze him just as a prospect, and you don't look at the height and everything, you look at where does the ball go, you start to understand the offensive scheme, you talk to the coaching staff, so you start to figure out, okay, what were you trying to do here? And then you start to understand, like, okay, this is what he had to do in this offense, and, man, he can flat throw the football. Like, he's very athletic, and he rushed for 1,000 yards and everything, but he didn't need to. Like, he is not Lamar Jackson. And I think the more we study him, the more information you get out there. Even though people say they watch college football, they like to put guys, if they look a certain way, into a certain bucket. Like, he can only do this. And that's why his pro day was situated was yesterday. He didn't make any throws on the move, on the run, because he knows people think that. So he tried to work on the things people think that he can't do. As a smaller quarterback, I love the fact that he went out and hired one of the great small quarterbacks in the NFL history in Jim Zorn, who was a lefty. He trained him and got him ready for his pro day and everything. So Jim's a great guy, fundamentally very, very sound, and he had him ready to perform yesterday. And you could see that he's just trying to remove some of the myths that people think. But when you stop looking at height and you just look at him as a prospect and you see the football and how he can direct the football, he can throw it high, he can throw it low, he can throw it with velocity, like he can put a touch on it. Those are all the things that typically, when you are a dual threat quarterback or an athletic quarterback, those words they put with quarterbacks like Kyler, they don't have that ability to be able to throw. They can either throw the ball long and throw it hard, but they don't have that ability to be able to vary the throws, which Kyler showed yesterday. So great day for him. And whatever people thought about him when the day began, through the workout, that didn't change. So if they thought that, man, he's the best prospect in the draft, the number one quarterback, he solidified that. If they thought he was number two, he solidified that yesterday.
He 100% did not hurt himself. And I don't know how much you – I think it's hard in pro days to help yourself drastically because it is such a controlled environment. When you do really well, people are like, well, you're supposed to do really
well.
Your
receivers, your environment.
Exactly right. But he – to my eye, made no errors from the people watching. I mean, he's 61 of 67. One of those is a drop. And then he had three misses to the deep right side of the field. But, I mean, we're talking about completed over 90% of these passes and mm-hmm. With one drop baked in there.
Right, and there's an excuse for that. Deep to the right side of the field, especially for young quarterbacks because they're throwing to the middle, they're not used to it with the hash marks that you have typically in the NFL. They're tighter to the middle of the field compared to college hash mark. The ball for a right-handed quarterback is spinning more to the right. So when they miss long and out of bounds. But that's something that's easily corrected.
I thought it was very smart that he, as you mentioned, didn't do anything on the run. It was all in the pocket. It was drop back, maybe one step to your left, one step to your right, and throw. And C is totally correct that if I could get over the height and just watch it.
Yes.
If I was watching him there with no defenders around or offensive linemen around him, that was my first time watching him. Because you can't really tell how tall he is in these clips because there's no one around him. I'd look at him and say, my goodness. I mean, the ball comes out quick. It comes out like you said, with velocity. He can clearly hit every quadrant of the field. I have a hard time getting over the height.
And that's okay.
When I've got Haskins, who I think can throw the ball maybe as well, if not a little bit better, obviously doesn't have the athleticism, I'm going to go with the guy who's 4.5 inches taller. But what he did yesterday was he absolutely, if you already liked him, you love him. And what is amazing to me about this whole process, Jenna, is at the week 4 mark of last college football season, Baker Mayfield was nowhere considered the first overall pick. At the week 4 mark of this college football season, question was, is he going to play baseball? And for the change to be that drastic and that quick in consecutive drafts potentially, to me is remarkable. Based on two guys from the same college with the same coach and what they both might end up going number one.
And what's the thing we loved so much about Baker Mayfield coming out last year? The kid was a winner. Say what you will about what he did, some of the antics and all of it. He was an absolute winner at every level. And I think sometimes that gets lost with Kyler Murray and his height and his measurements and all of it. The kid doesn't lose. He never lost a game in high school as a starting quarterback.
Man, say that again.
He has never lost a game as a high school quarterback.
In the state of Texas. I mean, there are five people, but look, there are some states that play football in high school that are different. California, Texas, Florida, Georgia. Like, the football is just totally different in them states. Now, there's others I can include, but in that state, at a big-time high school, didn't lose a game. 42-0 state champions. And we typically, all these other quarterbacks, the white ones, we never miss that. Oh, man, he's a winner. We never miss that. But we have not heard, Jenna, we have not heard about his resume. He said he thought that he was the greatest high school player in the history of the great state of Texas.
And I don't mean to reference my time in Texas twice in one segment, but I was there when he was in high school. So I had just moved to Texas when he was a senior in high school, and then shortly there, or maybe he was a junior, because shortly thereafter he went to Texas A&M, which is obviously the second most prominent college in Texas. This kid was legendary. This kid, his clips, the way we showed Zion clips last year when he was in high school, that's what we talked about in the Texas high school football communities down there. And when I watched him then, I thought, man, this guy's going to be an amazing college quarterback, and I put the ceiling on him there, and I thought he'd go play baseball. And throughout most of this year, I thought he was going to go play baseball. He is now probably going to be the number one pick of the draft, and I'm rooting for him. He will be the first person, if he's successful, ever successful at a high level in this league at that height, but you can't deny what he can do with his right arm. You can't deny the accuracy and the strength on the football and the velocity, and I liked how Joel Klatt put it, the RPMs, the way the ball spins, like all of that, you don't have to be a football expert to see, say, okay, this guy can do that really well. Can he survive the physicality of the NFL? That's the only question mark on it.
He may not be a loud guy, but he's confident. To consider yourself the best high school quarterback in the state of Texas, you want that kind of confidence when you're coming.
Absolutely.
All right, take a break. Coming up, would the Lakers be in the playoffs if LeBron never got hurt? Discuss that next on First Things First.
This Saturday night, don't miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. Two of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world put their perfect records on the line. Errol Spence Jr. takes on Mikey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship live from AT&T Stadium. Spence Jr. versus Garcia, Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order now.
The Big East Tournament quarterfinals tip off today with Providence taking on top-seeded Villanova, followed by Creighton battling Xavier. The action begins at noon Eastern on FS1 and on the Fox Sports app.
Okay, let's go, Nova. I can't go to you today because I got to go get my teeth fixed with Jenna's guy.
My dentist.
They're going to
sure.
fix up my teeth. But, okay. Nova, I'm there tomorrow.
So they better win tonight. Or this afternoon,
noon.
Pardon
yes,
me.
Let's go.
Never too much information at a
Jay Wright,
Carter.
I'm available for dinner.
Time for us to go viral. Giants fans still in shock after the team traded away three-time Pro Bowler Odell Beckham to the Browns. One Giants fan in particular was very upset about the news. Take a listen.
I don't know why. Because either way, he's good. But those people are dumb.
Who's dumb?
Whoever ran the NFL that traded him.
Traded who?
Odell Beckham. He is the only one that's good on the team. Everyone else sucks, and now we're going to be even worse.
Thank
we're
you.
Not even going to win one game the whole season.
Perfect.
Love it.
Well, sweetie, speaking I love
truth.
Your intensity, but they do have a running back. He is really, really good. But, man, I'm telling you, there is a lot of Odell Beckham, number 13, female jerseys in New York City. That dude sold some merchandise. People love him in New York.
And right now, you can probably get him in a discount, dirt cheap price. Now, I wonder if her assessment, which is probably a little on the harsh side, is closer to reality than the GM Dave Gettleman's assessment, which is we can contend while we rebuild. I wonder at the end of the season, are we going to think the young lady sitting there saying, everyone stinks, we're not going to win a game.
Did
what's
you
going
speak to,
be closer
to a bunch
anymore?
Of Giants fans yesterday? They all, most of them, felt the exact same way she did.
Yes,
big upset here in New York City from
it's a popular guy, man. It's amazing.
He's dumb. Whoever runs the NFL.
Whoever runs the NFL, they're dumb.
That guy.
Doofuses.
All right, time for stories to start your morning this morning. Earl Thomas finally found a home, and it's not with the Cowboys, but it is with the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore signed the safety to a four-year, $55 million deal, $32 million guaranteed. See, how much better did the Ravens' defense just get by signing Earl Thomas?
Well, I have a tremendous amount of faith in their defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale.
Yeah.
Man, he runs a great defense. They lost a few players, but, man, Earl is a baller, man. He is a football player, and his mindset and psyche fits in well in Baltimore and how they do things. They're a defensive organization, very, very physical, a lot like when he had success in Seattle there. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I just hope he can stay injury-free. He's had a couple bad ones the last couple years.
I think a healthy Earl Thomas is still the best in the league at his position. And so if he's healthy, they just got better. I know they lost Eric Weddle, but he's a better player right now than Eric Weddle.
Absolutely.
Now, the Ravens lost three starters from their front seven, but they've retained everyone on the back end except for Weddle, and I think they had an upgrade there. This was one of the two best defenses in football with a healthy Earl Thomas. They should be in contention for at least in the top five once again next season.
All right, moving on. Teddy Bridgewater has an interesting decision to make. The 26-year-old quarterback is reportedly weighing staying with the Saints as the heir apparent to Drew Brees, or signing with Miami and competing for the starting Dolphins job with Ryan Tannehill. Teddy met with the Dolphins yesterday. Nick, what do you think Teddy Bridgewater should do?
If he has to compete with Tannehill, I think I'd strongly consider staying in New Orleans one more year. If Miami's saying, if you sign with us, we're cutting Tannehill and it's your job, then I think you've got to go where the starting job is guaranteed. But when you have a chance of having, you know, even if you win the job, if you have a rough stretch, people saying go back to Tannehill. I wouldn't want to go to get in a quarterback competition with a guy who's making the type of money Tannehill is. But if they are going to cut him, then you go with the starting job. If not, I'd be content sitting behind Brees one more year.
Well, one of the things you loved about Drew Drew Brees, Jenna, was that he said, hey, look, Chris, I'm in as good a shape as any quarterback. I just don't brag about it. I got a staff of people. I eat all the right things. So we don't know how long Drew Brees
might
is going to play.
Year.
But the ability to have your own franchise, and if it happened to be in your backyard like Miami, Teddy Bridgewater's from Miami. He went to high school, Miami Northwestern, led them to state championships. So the ability to be able to play in front of your family, have your own team. Jim Caldwell is the assistant head coach. Greer, the general manager, both of these African-American. Head coach and African-American. Mm-hmm. It would be the first time that we have seen that combination. African-American, head coach, general manager, and quarterback combination in the NFL. We're going into our 100th year celebrating football. So that would be a very, very great combination to have.
Really cool story.
All right, moving on.
I just realized that. It was hard for me to spit that one out.
I saw you coming out on the fly.
It worked, though. It all got out. The Blake Bortles era in Jacksonville has come to an end. The Jaguars released their former third overall pick after signing Nick Foles this offseason. Jacksonville was 24-49 in games that Blake Bortles started. CC, will we see Bortles under center again in this league?
Man, I know this league, and they have a ugly, ugly history of giving guys who can't play an opportunity. So I would be naive to think that his career is over with. No, he's got a few more opportunities in it. Let's say Blaine Gabbert. Hadn't he been a starter a couple times, different places? San Francisco, Tennessee. Yes, Blake Bortles, he will get the opportunity to play somewhere else.
Jenna, how tall is Blake Bortles?
Blake is 6'5",
I think. So, I mean, Denver needs a backup, right? I mean,
he's not tall enough to be the starter for John Elway, but he might be tall enough to be the backup.
Go in there. That is true. Touche, Jenna Wolf. Jenna Wolf, get a little spicy political commentary. Well done. You've hung out with me too much.
3 points.
Listen, he's not going to be a starter anywhere. And I think it's going to be harder for him to just ease into a backup spot because he has become, fairly or unfairly, a punchline in a lot of cities. But do I think he's going to be out of football next year? No, he'll be someone's backup
There's
quarterback.
There's always a coach out there, Jenna, that thinks, you know something? Let me have this kid. He's really talented. I liked him coming out of college. He went to Jacksonville. They ruined him. I can resurrect his career.
Real quick. I'm sorry. What about a system fit, C? Where do they have a quarterback that's big, can run, and can't throw? Buffalo. He's the perfect backup to Josh Allen. Josh Allen comes out, got the same exact offense. That's an option as well. So maybe Buffalo works for
him.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown was officially introduced to the Raiders faithful yesterday. The marriage between AB and John Gruden will certainly be an interesting one to watch. Spicy versus spicy. The 7-time Pro Bowler addressed the media for the first time since this was announced, and he can't wait to dive into Gruden's offensive system.
I'm just here as a sponge to soak up every information Coach got to be as successful as I can be and to help the team take it to a new level. So I'm just excited to be in the same buildings with guys who've been great from the past. But I'm excited to be here and help things go to another level as far as the winning environment. My goal really is to catch Jerry Rice. I'm playing with a guy like Coach Gruden. Obviously, he know what it takes to keep me upright and fresh and to keep me out there for a long time. So. You know, it's a tremendous challenge. It's a challenge every year to prove my love for the game, you know, and I'm just taking it 1 year at a time.
One of the benefits we have of working with a guy like Nick Wright is he crunches numbers as things come out. So Antonio Brown mentioned Jerry Rice, and guess what Nick said while it happened?
Well, so listen, he said he wants to catch Jerry Rice.
Right.
Jerry Rice is at 22,800-ish yards.
Of course you know that.
Antonio Brown's at 11,200-ish, so that's easy math. If he doubles his production, right. If he has the career he's had, has the exact
again.
Same. Again, he'll be like 400 short.
Short.
He'll be a good month of football away, and that's the yards. Touchdowns, he's, I think, about 130 short, mm-hmm. which is, so if he has the rest of his career, the exact number of touchdowns you had in the entirety of your career, he'll almost catch Jerry.
So pretty likely.
So he's right there.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's right there.
But that's not fair to be, like, he can have a great tenure
in Oakland.
And never touch Jerry Rice's numbers.
Well, then what is going to be the barometer? Like, what's going to be considered a success for Antonio Brown? I mean, he already passed the first test. He shaved that mustache,
yes.
re-dyed mm-hmm. it its natural color, and mm-hmm. got rid of some of the things on top. But tell me what would be considered a success for AB in Oakland.
Well, Jenna, he's off to a great start. I know you hate when people change teams and then they get an opportunity. I'm sitting there waiting for them, and then they put off that first impression. You're like, I don't like it. It has nothing to do with can they play. They lose the first press conference. What he did was he sat down there. He did. He fixed his mustache. He had his hair in a hairstyle that was presentable. And he talked with the people who decided to extend his contract, and he talked about, I'm going to take this 1 year at a time, because he wants to show them that he really loves the game. And before we had this big blow up, I told Nick for the longest time, this is one of the hardest working guys. This guy spends an amazing amount of money on his body. Like, he is a workout fool. He gets up in the morning loving to work out. And those types of guys, especially as a wide receiver, because he doesn't get into a lot of big collisions, he can play for a long time. So for me, he had the right attitude. It started with him and John Gruden sitting down in John Gruden's office, and John Gruden had every pass play that he had ever participated in with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they went through that film, watching it and watching it. So John Gruden knows the type of player that he's getting. But he told him, you're good at certain areas, but there's some areas you're not good at. And those are the areas I'm going to push you. And that's one thing with Gruden. Man, you will get tired of him every day being at. He coaches pro like they coach in college. And we haven't seen pros that really respond that way. So AB is a workout warrior. I believe it is a good fit. I'm glad they had Mike Mayock there, because I believe that they're going to get some talented players there in Oakland. I believe the story is going to change there in Oakland. And it starts with, like, with a relationship. AB humbling himself, saying, that guy right there is getting ready to get me to football. And if you want to play a long time, AB, sometimes it's not about your ability at the end. It's about your leadership. Is he going to be the face of the Oakland Raiders when they go to Vegas? So that's what he's proven in these first couple intros to him. So he's off to a great start. He's not a dumb guy. He knows how to market himself. Let's get back to the football part. Yeah. Because that's the part he is a master. He's the best in the NFL currently of what we had. Six straight seasons, 100 catches, six straight seasons, 1,200 yards. You wouldn't want anything else from a wide receiver. So I like the way he got it started, the relationship there with the media, the coaching staff. Let's get back. He went out to the field, worked out with Carr. This is who this guy is.
And narratives in the NFL about teams or players can turn on a dime. I remember when the Eagles and Giants were both had an open head coaching position, and the Giants hired Ben McAdoo, and the Eagles hired Doug Peterson.
Both of them up-and-coming offensive coordinators.
Exactly right. And 1 year in, Eagles fans were angry. Why did we go with Peterson? We could have had McAdoo. And a year later, McAdoo is fired, and Doug Peterson is a Super Bowl champion. And now McAdoo, it's not like he is the next hot name people are trying to hire for a head coach. And Doug Peterson seemingly as much job security as anybody this side of Bill Belichick. Narratives with Antonio Brown can change. Like, we can forget what has been a really, I think, uncomfortable and unfortunate, call it 6 to 18 months, if he produces the way he always has, the Raiders win some games, he doesn't have the type of off-field nonsense associated that was associated with him in Pittsburgh, and if at the same time Pittsburgh struggles this year, then all of a sudden the narrative's like, oh, wait. Maybe it was the quarterback more, whether it's accurate or not. My point is, sometimes the facts stop really mattering, and it's the story that gets told. Yes. I know Antonio Brown will produce. I know Antonio Brown is going to work hard because, as you said, and this is, it is like the most common refrain in the NFL, whether people like AB or not. Everyone says, like, as a...
You can't deny that.
It's like it's part of his name. Hardest worker in the NFL, right. Antonio Brown. And there, when it comes to stories and narratives, his story and narrative also is a great one for the totality of his life, coming from being homeless, where the circumstances, if he has a redemption act. We love a redemption plotline. We love to build you up, see you fall, and then build you back up again. And so I think he is a great player. And I obviously think the Raiders got an absolute steal. Now, who's going to be his quarterback? What will Gruden show an ability to produce a high-level offense, which he's done very rarely in his coaching career? Those are fair questions, but that was a great start.
Right, and it's, you're talking about storylines. It's a great storyline that the Raiders would be back as being an elite team. It's a great storyline that John Gruden goes into the booth, comes back. It's a great storyline Mike Mayock coming out of television, talking about draft picks, talking about NFL, going on to run an NFL team. So they have more people. I know on this show we've been critical of them. I've been critical of them because they're just the facts. But That's a good story waiting to happen. Yesterday was a good day.
And the best way to change the narrative is for him to get it on that field and
just
produce.
Win games.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
What did
Moving
I
on.
To say? Just win, baby?
By a all accounts, LeBron's first season in L.A. has not gone well. You could pick your reason why. Finger pointing, trade rumors, no playoffs, which is all but a certainty at this point. But truth be told, had it not been for a small wet spot on the floor, the one LeBron slipped on, tore his groin, and missed over a month of action, this Laker team was on track to make the playoffs. Yesterday, LeBron met with the media and said this season could have been very different.
It's easy to say, well, if, you know, but you can't do that. You know, for me, I can't do that. I'll be cheating myself. Obviously, I know, you know, how I was leading this team going into December 25th and how I was approaching the ball club was right on track on how I do every single year. And especially I was even more patient with the young guys. And unfortunately, one slip and fall here, you know, a tear of the groin, slap down on our other mastermind, Rajon Rondo, on his hand. Now we got a torn groin and a broken hand, and both of us are out for 10 and a half weeks combined. So, you know, definitely it was sucked at that point in time of our season.
All right, let's play a little hindsight, CeCe. You think the Lakers would have made the playoffs if it weren't for LeBron's injury?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think they would have made the playoff. I think it's fair to say, I don't think it's an excuse, but it's not only LeBron, but the Rondo thing. You can't have both of those guys out of the organization because there are a lot of things that not on the stat sheet, but the overall leadership and what these younger players need, someone to stabilize the ship, you can't have both of them injured because the effect from a leadership standpoint, when you get injured in sports, you lose a lot of your leadership. Like Kevin Durant, he couldn't lead last night. Professional athletes do not listen to guys that are hurt. Like, you lose that feel. We saw that with Nick Foles. Man, what was Carson Wentz doing? Cheering. Like, you lose your leadership because you're not here to help us. And it's amazing. It's like you're on a different team when you're hurt compared to when you're in the flow of things, even if you're injured and still playing. So, yes, I think it's fair to say Christmas night, they beat Golden State. I mean, tremendous win. LeBron goes down.
No, and nobody, sorry to interrupt, just real quick. On Christmas night, that was when the Lakers were still, if you fall down, stay down till your teammates get there to pick you up. Nobody thought the veterans and the young players were disconnected. Like, LeBron said it there. He said, now maybe it's a little revisionist history, but he said, I thought I was connecting with the young guys. I thought, and then he was gone. They lost. The Anthony Davis thing happened. He, I think, then failed to reconnect with the young guys, and it all went askew. But on Christmas night, nobody thought. Even Chris Mannix had come around.
Where were they? They were in fourth place
Fourth place in the West, and I know it was real tight, fourth
but
to eighth.
But they were there.
But they were right there, and they were whooping the Warriors.
But then after that, and I like the fact, too, LeBron, he's starting to get a little more insight. He slipped a couple of times. I'm going to say slip because he didn't say I got injured. He said I tore my groin. Steph strained his groin, missed 11 games. LeBron tore his groin. He hadn't been saying that. He said he hurt his groin, but when you tear your groin, you could see when he came back, he was not at the weight that we saw him on Christmas night. You could see he didn't have the cardio, didn't have the wind, didn't have the stamina. When he went to the button to push it, Jenna, you were like, oh, man, he doesn't have it. He didn't have LeBron activation mode. So all those things are accurate. But if LeBron James is healthy, the Los Angeles Lakers are going to be in the playoffs. Now, if he just has his normal season, we're going to give him 5 or 6 games where he can take off for load management, all those types of things. But if he doesn't miss those 18 games, the Lakers are going to be in the playoffs. Well,
and listen, all of that's true. And, of course, that was the key moment. Now, was it salvageable when he came back? Maybe. If Anthony Davis never demands a trade and the team stays more connected, is it salvageable despite the injury? Yeah, probably. If Luke Walton does a better job while LeBron's out, is it salvageable? Yeah, I think it is. If they don't have, you have a list in front of you of awful losses.
Awful.
During the injury and post-injury. Yeah, it's probably, but yeah, of course, the key moment's the injury. But here's the thing. You guys know this about me, sports or otherwise, I'm a history buff. This is how the NBA works. It is moments in time that are fork in the road. For LeBron, Skip brings up all the time, and he's not wrong in some regard. The Ray Allen shot. If Ray Allen misses that shot, LeBron doesn't have a chance to go 37-12 in Game 7, and the Heat blueprint is considered a failure. On the flip side, the game we were at after the Cavs won their first title, if Kyle Korver hits his shot, Yep. Zach Lowe just wrote a whole story about this. The great NBA finals we missed out on because Kyrie was playing at his best level. LeBron's like, what would the narrative have been if Korver makes that shot? If the Cavs beat the Warriors with Durant, and then you're on my side on the GOAT
and
stuff.
My guy, MJ, I was there for a bunch of them. There was a bunch of times he passed to guys wide open, and they knocked down shots. That being Steve Kerr, that being John Paxson, B.J. Armstrong, Hodges, man, they knocked down shots. So those were shots, too, that changed the narrative.
We're in New York City. How differently do people remember Patrick Ewing if John Stark's shot in Game 6 isn't blocked by Akeem and they win that title? How differently do we remember Chris Webber and those Kings teams if Peja doesn't airball the three in the corner in Game 7 of the 0-2 Western Conference Finals? Like, this is what basketball is. It is moments in time that we build narratives around one, I don't want to say random, but one incident. And LeBron's incident was he slipped on the floor and tore his groin. And now it's, wow, you missed the playoffs in your prime. Are you going to get a free agent? How good of a leader are you? Or should the Lakers trade you? Hey, listen. It's not unfair.
Right.
That is how basketball works. That's how, by the way, football, like how many, what is the narrative on those Bills teams? If Norwood makes the first field goal, goal in the first Super Bowl. Like, this is just how sports are.
So existential of you this
morning.
Well,
no, but I mean, that's just how it is. Like, I don't, nobody should pity LeBron or the Lakers. Like, that's what happens.
And narratives are created by small, tiny things or decisions or moments.
And last point, we never think about the things that didn't happen. How many times in LeBron's career did he avoid the wet spot? How many times could he have torn his groin? Were those have been championship seasons?
Right.
This wouldn't be a championship season either way. So, like, that's just what happens. Now, next year, don't slip on the damn wet spot. Make the playoffs. See what happens.
Moral of the story, keep things dry.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.